Welcome to VFL Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language VFL Stuttgart fan podcast where our views are unofficial, uninformed, and unprepared. Joining me today is Matt. Matt, how are you doing on this Monday?
I watched the game this weekend, Travis. I'm doing wonderful.
Wait a minute. You're supposed to be uninformed.
I watched most of the game this weekend.
Okay, that's better. Well, you can reach Matt at Sail Racer if you want to kind of ask him about the parts that he watched this weekend, but hopefully we'll cover a lot of that here. We had a pretty great weekend for the both of us. Your Green Bay Packers won, my Cleveland Browns somehow won, and VfB Stuttgart won. So this is pretty much a perfect weekend for us both.
It's pretty great. Unless the Packers won, then the Bears shot themselves in the face repeatedly, which isn't unlike the Stuttgart game against Wolfsburg. So well,
yeah, the mighty,
wins a win.
The mighty Cleveland Browns ran off to, I think, a 24-3 lead and ended up winning 24-22. So the mercy rule, never there.
Skin of their teeth.
Well, yes. Well, all right, let's jump right into part one of this happy episode, episode number 28. Matt, we were traveling to the beautiful city of Wolfsburg. I don't know if it's beautiful or not. I've often heard people make fun of it, so I guess we'll just jump on that bandwagon. And the background of this one was, it was Wolfsburg was in eighth place. We were in 15th place. Both teams were minus five in goal difference. Stuttgart led 23-20 all time, though, so we had that going for us. Wolfsburg and Stuttgart were two of the last Bundesliga winners, really, with Dortmund as well. So we're in high company there. Wolfsburg, though, has been struggling a little bit. They got rid of their coach early in the season, and they hired a new guy named Kofeldt who helped get Bremen relegated. So that was kind of been some odd coaching decisions this year. But they were 2-1-3 under him, and Stuttgart was 1-2-3 in their last six. I don't know, Matt. What were you thinking going into this match?
Well, taking a look at Wolfsburg's schedule, they had four losses in a row, if you include Champions League. Mm-hmm. And I got thinking about it, and I was just like, this feels like an opportunity for Wolfsburg that in their minds they're going to be like, this is a get right game. And I felt like they were just going to bring it and curb stomp Stuttgart. But I should have known better, because Kofeldt's first name is Florian. And we know how I feel about people named Florian on this podcast.
Oh my God.
Don't trust a Florian. They cannot pull through.
This is a way to product placement, by the way. Now you guys all have to listen to episode 27 to understand what we're talking about. Yeah, I didn't know about that. So we've got the match against a Wolfsburg team that is struggling a bit, and they played a midweek match. And I'm always curious if the midweek match is going to make a difference or not. And I always get kind of excited because I think it will, and then it never does. But this one, it seemed like it did a little bit. I was a little concerned, though, as the match got started. We all heard the news that Borna Sosa was out until January because of back issues. And that immediately gives you cause for concern. And then probably not as much concern, Daniel Didavi, I don't think, even made the trip. So he's kind of looks like he's exiting his way stage left, you know, so to speak. Going into this match, were there any of the lineup issues that you saw? The only thing that we really saw was Koulibaly was in, as well as Karazor for Sosa and Al-Ghadoui. Anything excite you about that lineup? Or
it was fine. Sosa being out is definitely kind of a groan-worthy event, because, you know, we needed more injuries on this team. Koulibaly starting was fine. Marmoush up top I thought was really good. I think he's been pretty solid lately. But really, Forster was starting, so we knew we were going to win.
It's pretty much a given. It's death, taxes, and Forster starting. Those things all lead to guarantees. Yeah, so he goes, Koulibaly's in the lineup, and Sosa's out. So we've got the first half of this match, and I was excited to see. It was the first time that I remember Matarazzo kind of going to the public and not calling out an individual player, but calling out the team and just saying, listen, after that Hertha match, we started well, and then everybody kind of did their own thing. And he sounded kind of angry, and we really haven't heard that from him really since he's been a head coach here. So I was interested to see how the team would start off. And the beginning of the game to the end of the game, say what you will, but this team, I think, brought it from the beginning whistle to the end. They were pressing, they were pressuring, they were constantly in Wolfsburg's face. That was a great reaction, I thought, that they kind of took what went south in the Hertha match, and for the full 90-some minutes, they were going at it.
It was really interesting to see Matarazzo's comments, because he's so reserved, he's so measured, he's so careful about everything he says. So you know there was a motivating factor there. And yeah, I totally agree that it really came out. Aside from, which we'll get to in a little bit, I felt like at the very end, we saw Stuttgart bunker for the first time this season. but and we'll get to that in the second half. But yeah, they came out, played well, played hard. Off-ball movement, which is something I always look for, was great. Could not have asked for a much better start.
Yeah, and then the start kind of takes a little bit of a kind of a direction that went south. Roberto Massimo, who has just really developed nicely this year, and he's kind of taken over that spot where Silas was on the right wing back, and it's been a growing curve for him, but he's just gotten better and better and better. I thought he was playing pretty well, and then the 25th, 26th minute, he comes out with that ankle injury. He's out for the rest of the year now, too. He'll be back in January. Thoughts on how he's developed, this season?
He's been he's one of the guys that we keep waiting to make that next step, and I feel like he was finally starting to make it. Mm-hmm. And to watch him go down like that, anybody who's ever rolled their ankle badly playing sports knows that awful feeling. And I was just cringing on the couch watching it. Really feel bad for the kid. He was finally starting to really establish himself, and then boom.
Yeah. He's had a really nice development, and it's just kind of nice because he falls in that culture of the club of getting kids on the pitch, letting them play and going through their growing pains and hopefully developing like he has. Let me ask you this real quick, sidebar. We didn't say Mateo Klimowicz this match. He was on the bench though. He, I would argue, had a higher probably rating as a youth player and as a professional player. But which one? I mean, I don't even think it's an argument that Massimo is the one who has developed much more significantly up to this point.
Oh, no question. I mean, Klimowicz has that pedigree. I don't know if you know or not, but his dad played in the Bundesliga.
I may have heard that every episode and every match he's ever played.
Every poor guy, every time he's on the field, they talk about his dad. But yeah, he has not clearly been progressing at the rate that Massimo has. He doesn't make the same impact when he's on the field. Seems a little lost out there, trying too hard, but not quite getting stuff done. Maybe he'll use this as an opportunity to get better. We can hope, but yeah. I haven't seen it out of him yet.
Yeah, speaking of impact, so Massimo comes out of the match, and Stenzel comes into the match. And Austin, who's on this podcast regularly, has a theory that when Stenzel comes into the match, within 10 minutes, the other team is going to score. So his theory, thankfully, wasn't shown today or in the match on this weekend. But oy vey, he had a rough one, I thought. And then especially the end of the match, I think he almost had his Carazor moment where he almost gave up two penalty kicks in like a 30-second span. And even if you read the kicker website, they mentioned it, how the official missed a questionable, probably it was a non-call, but then missed what should have been a penalty kick for Wolfsburg. There were some rumors that Stenzel might be going on loan to a division or a Zweite Liga club. I know we had to put him in because of the injuries, but boy, oh boy, there's a couple guys on this club. Clement is probably one of them. Stenzel's probably another one. Probably Al Gadoui's another one that, good guys,
yeah,
good practice players, but I think the jury's, if it's not out, it's pretty close to being out. What were your thoughts on Stenzel's play?
Stenzel, I always think of him as a defender. I think Matarazzo views him more as a defensive mid, kind of more of a guy with some attacking, and I think he's got a little bit of attacking upside, but he's got just this unique ability to have his brain switch off in critical moments and make just completely boneheaded mistakes. Yeah. But yeah, I think the list of guys you made, would all be really good Zweite Liga players, kind of like Simon Torota. you know, who is a hero for us for a year, and yes, then we get promoted, and he just disappeared. But I feel like all those guys are not quite good enough to be impact players in the Bundesliga, but they're better than most of the other guys in the second league. So I don't know what you do with them.
Yeah, I kind of feel for Stenzel, because we'll talk about Koulibaly here later, but I almost feel like he was put in that wingback position, and that's just, I'm certain that's not his position. I think he's probably more of a traditional back in a four at the back type of system. I don't think he's that, I mean, he's not even a poor man Silas. He's not, like you said, this offensive wizard. So maybe it's putting him in a tough spot, but he had a rough one. But let's talk about the, what everybody was talking about, our power goal leading scorer, Dino Mavropanos, in the 25th minute, when Golic comes down the wing, who played fantastic, by the way, passes it across into the middle. Marmoush gets a foot on it. Marmoush is about to go get it, and then out of the corner of the screen, you see Dino wave him away and just crush this ball into oblivion for, what is it, his fourth goal in the season? His fifth goal in the season?
He's now our team leader in goals.
That was a thing of beauty. If I'm a defender, I am afraid for many reasons when Mavropanos comes down the pitch. And when he is getting ready to launch that ball, I'm getting out of the way.
Yeah. There's a Premier League podcast I listen to called Men and Blazers. And when they see a goal like that, they like to say that he wolf blitzered it into the situation room. And that shot into my head right away, because how else do you explain that? It was a laser beam up into the top corner, just absolutely brutal strike.
He's what, 6'4"? The knock on him has been injuries. But when he's healthy, he's a difference maker. And you just mentioned Arsenal. They have got to be kicking themselves right now.
I mean, Arsenal are generally kicking themselves, I think. But yeah, specifically for this. And one of the things I noticed, we talked a couple weeks ago about when Ito got his goal and the replacing that the players were doing, the defensive mids dropping back to the center backs. You couldn't see it on the live shot, but they did the, you know, coming from behind Mavropanos shot on one of the replays. You could see Carrizor recognize Dino going forward and dropping back. And so I really think that this is an intentional part of our attack that Matarazzo's leveraging. And you know, why not, when you've got a guy like Mavropanos who can make a shot like that? Yes, get him all the shots you can.
Yeah, it was, you mentioned this a couple podcasts ago about when Ito had his goal. Shout out to Ito, by the way, rookie of the month in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
So congrats to him. I saw somebody on the Valve Reddit page said they should just change the award to the Stuttgart player of the month, rookie of the month. So congratulations to Ito on that award and that honor. Yeah, Dino's just had an amazing season. The option to buy him is not really an option anymore. It's going to happen. It's a given. And I forget the value they're getting for this player, but it is just pennies on the dollar, to be quite honest. Yeah. And even though Mangala did not get the assist for that, I mean, shout out to him. He's been playing fantastic the last few matches. He had basically set up the assist on this one, and then the goal we'll talk about in a minute, he did the same thing. I mean, Mangala and Endo are just playing great in the midfield right now.
Yeah, we saw last year when Mangala was out for a little while, that all of a sudden ball movement on the team completely fell apart. And I think he's one of those underrated, underappreciated guys. And we obviously appreciate him, but what you see a lot happening, like, you don't realize that he's pulling the trigger on a lot of stuff, but he's really a puppet master through the midfield. And I think we're very fortunate to have him.
Yeah, there was some word that he might start to get a call up to the Belgian national team, just because he is finally, you know, starting to get noticed. Once that goal goes in, though, Wolfsburg kind of kicked into gear a little bit. I read you this this quote from Kicker off the air, and I love this. So, according to Kicker, so after the goal, the residue acted like a wake-up call for the Wolves. The lower Saxony suddenly flipped the switch from then on, pushed passionately for compensation, but continued to grapple with the poisonous Schwabians. Poisonous Schwabian. I love that. I don't know what it means, but I love it.
Yeah, I kind of want it on a t-shirt now.
I think it could work so many different levels. So Wolfsburg picks up their game. And let's give a little shout out to one of the Florians. I don't know if you remember Mueller's save on that Maximilian Arnold free kick on the 28th minute, but it kind of skipped through the Stuttgart defense and he had a nice save there. Let's give a little credit where it's due.
Still don't trust a Florian, but I'll give him credit for that one.
You're not going to give him credit, fair enough.
Never.
So we go to, sorry, Florian Klein, Mueller, and whatever. All right, so we go to the second half. Things are looking good, and the second half opens up, and we're still pressing, we're still pressuring. There was no real let-off. And then in the 63rd minute, everybody's new favorite player, Phil Forster, Mangala passes over to Koulibaly. Koulibaly has a sort of pass that is deflected. Forster pokes it in. You nailed it on Twitter before the match even started when it was said that he was going to be in the lineup. Forster starts, and what happens?
We win.
That's as simple as.
So I don't understand it. I don't really particularly think Forster's a great player. I don't get it, but he starts, we win.
But he's got two goals on the year now, and he put it away. Let's talk about the two players that were in that responsible for that goal. Koulibaly had the pass, and he technically got the assist. But if you watch it, it was a pretty rough pass that was deflected by the Wolfsburg player. And to Forster's credit, he put it away. I was texting you guys you during the match, and I'm just like, Koulibaly is driving me insane. His touch was so just so much left to be desired. That between his touch and Forster's touch, and there was another player, maybe it was Stenzel at that time. They would get So Marmoush and Forster and Koulibaly, they couldn't do anything with the ball. And to Marmoush and Forster, I kind of get it a little bit, but Koulibaly is kind of driving me insane a little bit. I'm struggling for words to describe how I feel about him on the pitch. Help me out here.
So you watch the U.S. men's national team. Right. So we're Americans. We watch our national team. Koulibaly is reminding me more and more of Bundesliga Jossi Zardes. All the potential in the world, runs like a demon, ball gets at his feet, and who knows which direction it's going to go or whether it's going to be positive. I don't know what to think about him. He puts in the effort. He gets to a lot of good places, but then he gets the ball at his feet and it's a mystery. It's a grab bag of chaos about what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think that's the main benefit of him on the pitch is chaos. You don't know what's going to happen. And the other team doesn't know what's going to happen. And there were probably more times I thought he should have shot it this weekend than passed it.
The word that goal, he's going up the left and Mangala makes a good play and he's got a couple different options. And I think he had two guys in mind and went between the two of them instead of two either one. And that's why it went off the Wolfsburg player. But in the idea of creating chaos, Stuttgart had five or six guys in the box when that happened. And Forster was just right place, right time. Mm-hmm. But the Wolfsburg defenders just had no idea what to do because there's just this sea of black and red jerseys in front of them. And it was chaos.
Yeah. The announcers even mentioned that during the match about how whenever Stuttgart was down there, they were hungry for a goal, I think he said. And that on the other side, when Wolfsburg was going, there was only one guy, maybe two on the offensive, but you were surrounded by four or five Stuttgart players. And so they came hungry in this match. They may not have had the same talent on paper as Wolfsburg, but I think they were hungrier and they came with a lot more fight. Maybe they were a little fresher because Wolfsburg had that chance.
A lot of credit to our midfield players who just – I haven't seen the stats, but I can't imagine how far those guys ran because they were back helping out on defense. They were up helping out on the attack. They're just everywhere. And that made the difference really in the game to me.
Yeah. And I don't want to rip on Koulibaly. I thought he did what he was supposed to do. He was all hustle. They have to pay attention to him on offense. He did have some really nice plays with his feet and some passes. Mm-hmm. He had a number of missteps too. So he's a tough player to peg, but Let's talk about another tough player that everybody's pretty much pegged, Phil Forsythe, a little bit. And I don't want to talk too much about him because we talk about him a ton. But here's what I do want to talk about. After he scored that goal, he, Koulibaly, Marmoush, and I think it was Mangala, all rushed, from at least what I saw on television, to Matarazzo. And there's a great picture of all of them hugging and celebrating together. And I, as much as Koulibaly might be frustrating, as much as Forster maybe not exactly fan favorite number one, I think that moment showed something that Sven Mislintat said after the match, the cohesiveness of this group, of how together they are, of how much we may question some of this stuff, but it seems like they're on the same page.
Yeah, I noticed at the end of the game in particular, the camera got a really nice shot of Matarazzo and Forster having a moment on the sideline and, you know, Mata's patting his cheeks and slapping him on the back. And there's clearly a lot of affection there between the two of them. And Matarazzo trusts that Forster is going to get things done and it's paying off. And yeah, it's in Mislintat. I made a note. I wanted to bring this up. He was so happy on the sideline. I feel like he's the avatar for all of the fans. He gets so pumped up and he's running around pumping his fists and slapping the players in the back. And it's what we would be doing if we were allowed to sit down on the bench too. And it's awesome seeing him get so pumped.
It is. And you brought this up a couple of podcasts ago about how the main scout or the being on the bench can be dangerous. I mean, we saw kind of the pressure when Reschke was here, I believe, a few seasons ago. Just the pressure that can put on the players and the coach and all that stuff. This seems to be a different vibe, and it's not like they're enjoying fantastic success. You know, they're still 16th on the or 15th on the table.
Give us some credit.
Yeah, so
we're ahead of Augsburg.
Yeah, let's two things before we move on to Matarazzo for a second. And I'm dead serious here. When Forster was subbed out in the 74th minute, granted we're up 2-0 and brought in for a defensive, you know, Kemp was brought in. I was like, oh no, it's gotten to the point where I'm starting to trust, especially on defense. I'm starting to trust Phil Forster. And when he gets subbed out, I'm starting to get concerned. So I don't know if that's more me or more them.
I'm having a hard time with Forster this year because, you know, 2 years ago in the second division, it seemed like he was a second and a half to 2 seconds behind what was happening around him all the time.
Right.
He'd get the ball and there'd be a very clear pass to make and he'd stand there and stare at this off into space and somebody would take it from him. And it was infuriating. And now, I mean, somehow the dude got fast. I don't know if shaving that creepy mustache off, like improved his aerodynamics, but he's tearing down the field with the ball at his feet. It's awesome. It's exciting to see him do so much better. Well, I was really interested that Matarazzo brought in Kempf for Forster, and I was really confused about what we were going to do, but I'm pretty sure we switched over to a 4-4-2 at that point. And that's when we saw, you know, about the 77th minute, really, we started playing really, really defensively right after that, that penalty for the handball. And it was interesting to see, not only Stuttgart play defensive first, which we haven't done under Matarazzo. We've been a counterattack or a full attack team, but also to switch out of the 3-5-1-1 or 3-5-2 that Matarazzo loves so much. And it was just kind of cool to see that we've got that tool in our bag and we can bunker down if we have to.
Yeah. It's Kemp is Mark Oliver Kemp has got to earn his spot back because Hikori Ito has played so well, which who would have saw that coming? So he's got to earn his spot back, but it is nice that we can do a little Union Berlin. And if we're up two goals, take the pedal off the gas or take, you know, the foot off the gas a little bit and put in a legit starting Bundesliga center back and Mark Oliver Kemp and have the flexibility, especially with a guy like Endo, because I think used to play center back in whatever league he played in before the Bundesliga. He's a little shorter for that, but he's got hops. So yeah, I can see. Let's stick to your point on Matarazzo. Now, we'll kind of go off topic a little bit because Leipzig just let go a match or two ago of their head coach, American Marsh, and Matarazzo is an American as well. And it was interesting. Derek Ray, who does amazing announcing for the Bundesliga, had an interview with Matarazzo in August, I believe. And both of us kind of caught a quote from Matarazzo and Derek Ray to essentially the point that Matarazzo had to work hard to get to where he's at. And Jesse Marsh did not. And Matarazzo just kind of, what was this? To paraphrase, what did he say?
Kind of basically like everybody takes their own path, and like he took his and he wouldn't change it, and Marsh took his and that's fine. And it's kind of like acknowledging that Derek Ray said, yeah, he got put in the assembly line and I didn't, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, it was kind of, I looked this up. So they both went to Ivy League schools in the United States. Marsh went to Princeton, Matarazzo to Columbia. Marsh played about 15 seasons in the MLS, over 300 matches. He was an assistant coach for Team USA. Then he was an MLS head coach basically from 2011 to 18. And then boom, was it RB Salzburg in Austria. And then Leipzig, whereas Matarazzo played mostly fourth tier regional football in Germany. Had about 200 matches for about 10 years until about 2010. And then was assistant coach in Nuremberg, their youth 17, U19, then was there for a number of years before moving on to the U17 at Hoffenheim before he became Nagelsmann's assistant coach in Hoffenheim. So he was basically an assistant coach or a youth coach for a decade. And you can't help but think that's how he's able to relate to the youth on this team. He's been relating to youth his entire career.
Yeah, and he's also no stranger to struggle. And I think that's why he doesn't panic when this team has kind of a rough time. Because, you know, you play in the fourth division for that long, you're going to see that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he's also, the other advantage, Marsh is 5'11", Matarazzo is 6'6".
So boom.
The tail of the tape does not lie right there. All right, let's get into something you said earlier about after we started playing bunker ball a little bit, Wolfsburg had a clear-cut chance around the 69th minute, and they ballooned it out of there. And I want to give credit to Flying Dutchman on Reddit. Said everybody was excited about the match, the win, and all that stuff. And his quote was, "Let's be honest now, though. We won today mostly because of how, you know, bad Wolfsburg were." And basically implying that it was a pretty lucky win. If you look at the XG, it was 1.7 for Wolfsburg, 1.5 for Stuttgart. They had 18 shots to our 11. They only had 4 on target to our 3. But does Flying Dutchman have a point here? Was this a win against a bad, tired team, and we should kind of count ourselves lucky?
I thought Wolfsburg looked like a hot mess for most of this game, really. And that 69th minute opportunity they have was bad enough that I noted it specifically to bring up that Müller's rebound control remains terrible. And that was a ball that came in that he deflected right to a Wolfsburg player. And we got really lucky that something worse didn't happen with it. I think Wolfsburg were not good in this game, but you can only play the team that's in front of you. And we took advantage of it. And I thought Stuttgart looked pretty good in this game. So I think we deserve the win, but yeah, we might've lucked out a little bit getting a bad Wolfsburg team.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing, is that the difference between the team this year and last year is that last year they beat the teams they were supposed to quote unquote beat. And I think aside from Bielefeld at the end, or maybe Bielefeld both times, they beat everybody that finished beneath them on the table. They took care of their business, and they simply have not done that this year. And that's why we're in the situation that we're in. And so when you're given a team that's struggling with confidence, struggling with form, and maybe struggling with fitness, you've got to take advantage of it. And they certainly did. You know, speaking of not taking advantage, I'm interested in this. So there's the Maximilian Arnold penalty in the 80th minute. Marmoush goes to kick it, and he tries to do a Panenka penalty where he just kind of lofts it into the middle. And when it goes in, it looks amazing. If you're not familiar, it was a Czech footballer who did this back in the 1970s. And it's kind of a quote unquote, to use their term, a cheeky play. Marmoush is on loan from Wolfsburg, and he seemed to be getting into it with some of the Wolfsburg players. And then he tries this kick that I don't know if you saw the post game comments. Even Phil Forster was like, yeah, that wasn't a great idea. That didn't show a lot of respect. So it was pretty much universally disparaged here. What are your thoughts on Marmoush's, you know, doing that kick? And then I don't know, his reaction with Wolfsburg. I found that to be, because he was booed pretty heartily from the Wolfsburg faithful, all 30 of them that were there once when he got off the pitch.
It's you always wonder what the situation is for players when they go on loan. If it's a, you know, a situation where they get sat down and said, hey, we don't have a lot of time for you, but we really want you to see the field. We're going to send you over here so you can get a little bit more time, come back and compete. Or if it's a, we don't know what to do with you, so can you go away for a season? You know, and how did Marmoush take that? I definitely think he was trying to be cute. And I definitely think that he was like, I'll show you guys, watch me do this cool thing. And if we weren't up two goals, I would have been really irritated by it, but we're up two, it's the waning minutes of the game. I don't know. It didn't really bother me. I thought Endo was going to put the rebound off the crossbar in, but it's, yeah, whatever. If he's getting Wolfsburg all wound up, good.
Yeah, I found it to be, like, it's one of those things that if it goes in, it's amazing. If it doesn't go in, you look like a fool. And unfortunately for Marmoush, and Matarazzo said it after the match, he didn't want to talk about that penalty. He just wanted to talk about his work rate, how well he played, how he was all over the pitch. And it's unfortunate that that was kind of the lasting, you know, memory that everybody had, because he was immediately subbed out, totally unrelated. He was going to be subbed out anyway for Silas. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this about the penalty. I was thinking you should have had one or two other guys take it, to be honest. Jokingly, I said Dino Mavropanos, because he's our greatest goal scorer ever.
Amen.
Yeah, I would like to see him, if he was going to take it, though, line up like 40 yards behind and just sprint at it.
Yes.
And watch Castile's Wolfsburg goalie pee himself as this Greek missile is coming at him. What I almost thought Koulibaly should have taken it, maybe to get a little bit of confidence. If it backfires, maybe that's a worse situation. But did you think anybody else should have taken that kick?
I don't know. Marmoush was working so hard up top and had a pretty good game and just hadn't gotten a good opportunity. So I get why they put him in there. There's any number of guys. I mean, you could have had Endo or Mangala or Förster, Mavropanos, Ito, anybody could have taken that. Really, I don't feel strongly about it in any direction, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough. So Silas comes into the match, Furich comes into the match. Great to see both those guys get some playing time. Especially Furich, that poor guy, I really like his potential. I think once, knock on wood, he gets healthy, I think he's going to bring a little bit of, we've seen of him, he's looked good.
And hopefully you could tell that they were both a little rusty, but watching Silas and Furich with their speed and their ball control ability, both terrorizing Wolfsburg, made me have feelings that I was a little uncomfortable with.
Well, speaking of feelings, I don't know if you follow the Brazilian Stuttgart fan club. So it's at VFB Stuttgart VR. So it's VFB Stuttgart Brazil. And they said this after the match, quote, "I don't know if there is an exact influence from Silas's return, but when we beat Mainz, I said that his return could give the team extra confidence," end quote. And I thought that was kind of an interesting observation. And I don't know if it's a matter of just healthy bodies coming back or the fact that Silas is an amazing talent, or going back to the big hug fest after Forster's goal and how what you mentioned about Sven Mislintat and how he goes nuts when anything positive happens, or how after the match he talked about how much he loves his club and how he's going to stick, you know, with him through the remainder of his contract. I don't know if it's just magic or what, but there is something about Silas being back on the pitch and 7 points since he's been back.
Yeah, and you wonder how much he's kind of a talisman for this team, right? With the issues that he went through with his manager and the ban that he had to serve. I bet the guys are just pumped for him that he gets to be playing again, and that brings good feelings, and good feelings beget good feelings, and you start winning, you get a little momentum, and a whole lot of things can change.
It's all about good feelings on this episode.
All the good feelings.
All good feelings. Well, I think so. That wrapped up the match. Everybody was happy. Everybody's feeling good on the trip back. And their reward, as we'll talk about later, is they get to host a little club called Bayern Munich tomorrow on Tuesday. So, well, enjoy it while it lasts, fellas.
Yeah. I will say, Travis, this team is undefeated, unbeaten, since you played the victors on the podcast.
Oh, that. It doesn't sound like you're definitely asking, but it sounds like you're
applying. I'm not saying it caused it, but I'm not saying it didn't.
When Michigan wins and Philip Forster starts, the universe comes together.
Guarantee it. Take it to Vegas.
Oh, man. Well, why don't we move on to part two of this episode, Matt, to questions here. And frequent contributor Joe, you can reach him at Luti Hayes, asks, what are your thoughts on the Coulibaly on the left as a potential replacement for Sosa if he leaves? And I think both you and I yelled at him on Twitter, hey, enough with the negative vibes, man.
Yeah.
There's rumors that Sosa has links to Premier League clubs. Everybody knows that Stuttgart has lost upwards of almost $90 million since the pandemic started. There's been word that they may have to sell a player. There's word that they may have to sell a player to make ends meet. And Sosa would be one of the top ones. What are your thoughts on that question? Coulibaly, if Sosa left, Coulibaly on the left.
It changes the dynamic of the team, really, because Coulibaly is not a dangerous crosser. He's a dangerous runner. So you get different stuff, but he's not going to be the complement for Kalajic that Sosa is. You know, he doesn't seem to have that skill set. Maybe he can learn it. I would not be excited if I read tomorrow morning that the team's selling Sosa and the plan is Coulibaly. I don't think it fits with what Matarazzo is trying to do offensively, at least not once Kalajic comes back. Until then, yeah, the chaos runs, they're exactly what we need.
Yeah, I don't see it either. I mean, I wish I knew offhand if Marmoush was a lefty or a righty, or if that even matters. Or Massimo, if he strictly plays on the right. Or Furich, is he a lefty or a righty? I'm not sure which side of the pitch he plays on, but I would think you would see Furich there before you'd see Coulibaly there. I would think you would see Marmoush there before you would see Coulibaly there. Maybe not Marmoush. Marmoush is a more of a forward type player. I don't see him tracking back as much as maybe that position requires, but Sosa is a pretty offensive player too. So I don't know, but Joe, to answer your question, no, you're wrong.
Boo. Yeah. Thanks for writing in, Joe.
That's what you get for writing in. Oh, but he does ask, here's a feel-good question. Who is your favorite non-Bundesliga top-flight player in the world? And how much do you think Stuttgart would pay to sign them? I'm going to have to hand this one over to you. I'm pretty strictly a Bundesliga guy. I don't pay much attention to anything else outside of that. So I might have to hand this one over to you.
Who's your guy from the Markham Shrimps?
Cole Stockton.
Yes.
Yes.
Sign him.
He's right. I was going to say Sasha Mulders. I don't know if you know who he is. He's a 36-year-old striker for 1860 Munich. If you have the chance and you're listening to this podcast, Google Sasha Mulders, M-O-L-D-E-R-S, and you will feel that there is a spot for you in the world of athletics. The guy is a professional player, but Matt, he looks like you and I.
Full-on dad bod.
There aren't many people that you and I are in better shape than, but I'm guessing Sasha Mulders is one of them.
Is he like, maybe he's like Phil Kessel, who plays in the NHL, who looks like he's shown up to regrout your tile and looks like he's in horrible shape, but is also one of the hardest working players on the ice every night. It's inconceivable.
It could be. I was trying to think of some players in the like that I know that are in the Premier League, like Antonio Rudiger or Timo Werner, and I'm very much dating myself because the only players I can mention are Stuttgart players that are over there. But yeah, Joe, I'm sorry. I don't pay much attention outside of the Bundesliga. So there's really no big star players outside of Cole Stockton that I would sign.
Who also sounds like a NASCAR driver.
He very well may be on the weekend. So, I don't know. All right.
My side piece from Stuttgart is Southampton from the Premier League. And they've got a guy, James Ward-Prowse, who's been there forever. He's very much in the Mangala mold. So it wouldn't make any sense for us to sign him, and he wouldn't leave Southampton anyway. He's the youth product there. He just signed a contract extension, but I like that dude because he's just a good, solid dude, plays hard, plays like Mangala.
Yeah, the problem with any of the questions about who would Stuttgart sign is the answer is always nobody. Because
that guy that you saw in Football Manager that one time as you were scrolling through that you'd never heard of, that's who they're going to sign, and he's going to be awesome.
Is there a 17 or 18 year old player in the French second division? Because that's the guy we're going to sign. It's not, I looked up, is it Lucas Rupp? Do you remember him?
That name sounds familiar.
He played for us one of the years we were relegated. So and he's in the Premier League. Yeah, we're not signing him either. Fine. Sorry, Joe. No, nobody. All right. So there you go. All right. Well, Matt, why don't we talk? Speaking of this weekend, let's get into the matches. Both are taking place this weekend and are taking place this week. So tomorrow and this weekend, Stuart's got the last two matches of the first half of the season. They play Bayern tomorrow. And it's so, yeah, that's a rough one. Monterazzo says we want to play courageous in that one. Okay. Okay, we'll do that. But I mean, here's the thing with that match. Even though it's 15th place versus first place, we lost to them by a combined score of 7-1 last season. The first match was actually pretty close. It was 1-2 Bayern up until the very end of the match. The second match was a rough one. That's when Silas blew out his knee. So not a lot of memories there. The only win in the last 10 matches we have against Bayern was when we ruined their celebration in 2018. When Ginchek scored two goals, Donis scored one, and Akolo, there's some names from the past, scored another. So that was kind of fun. But here's the weird thing. They're not crushing teams the last month. They beat Mainz by one this past weekend. They beat Dortmund by one. They beat Bielefeld by one. They lost to Augsburg, and they beat Freiburg by one. So in the last five matches, this isn't the Bayern of the previous month that was just crushing people. What do you think the betting predictors have given Stuttgart in this one? Stuttgart is at home. How many goals do you think they've given the underdog Stuttgart?
Stuttgart at home, probably 1.5.
You are rocking this. Yes. 1.5 exactly. Now, the Bayern match is always kind of a fun match to ignore because you pretty much expect what's going to happen. So you just kind of go into it, hoping for fun and to see what's going to go on. What are any thoughts going into this one tomorrow?
I think we have a chance because Bayern is not the buzzsaw that they normally are right now with their injuries and the COVID issues they have. Just like we do, they're more vulnerable than usual. And as you were saying, they had all these one goal games with these teams, some of them that we've beaten. I feel like we're getting better at the right time, and we might be meeting Bayern at a time when they're vulnerable and we're on the upswing. That said, a loss wouldn't surprise me, just be kind of a shrug and move about my day.
Yeah, I think you are very optimistic. You're still kind of soaking in the Michigan victories of the last couple of weekends. I think we got kind of lucky. I think we played well versus Wolfsburg, but I think Wolfsburg, we could have played for 3 days and they wouldn't have scored. It was just one of those days for them.
Yeah.
I don't think we or any team can have that much luck against Bayern, although Augsburg did. So maybe it can happen, but I'm not looking for much in this one. I am taking Bayern minus, you know, 1.5 in my predictions for this. I'm not sure if you picked this one yet or not.
Yeah, I picked Bayern. If I was putting money on it, it's hard to bet against Bayern. But I think we can win.
No,
I don't know if we will, but I think we can.
No, it's most of the matches. If you look at the last 10, it flip-flops between really close match, blowout, close match, blowout, close match, blowout. So I think you're right. With all the COVID situation that Bayern is having right now and the Joshua Kimmich situation, which is probably taking some maybe attention off the on-field product, maybe there is a chance. I don't think Nagelsmann is having the smoothest beginning, even though they're 6 points off with two matches left in the first round. I don't know if that many one goal wins is that impressive in Munich.
Yeah, I think the fans there expect them to crush everybody all the time. and eventually you're going to get disappointed by that, and you hate to see it.
Well, hopefully we can add some disappointment. The match that's much bigger for both us and the club we're playing is we're playing at Cologne on Sunday. Now, there's some big matches this weekend. So Wednesday, Augsburg is playing Leipzig. So that's big for us. Tuesday, tomorrow, Bielefeld is playing Bochum, which is a big match for us. Mainz is playing Hertha, which kind of big. But the big one is Wolfsburg and Cologne. Well, it's not the big one, but it's a big one. Cologne is on a bit of a downswing here. We're playing them on Sunday, and they've lost to Augsburg in their last match. They drew at Bielefeld. They had that huge derby win versus Gladbach. Then they had a draw versus Mainz, a draw versus Union, and then they lost to Dortmund. Their last win against us was a 2-0 win at Stuttgart in the Pokal with Modest coming off the bench to score, you know, two goals. That's the last match of the first half of the season. If Cologne, here's how crazy the table is. If we would have held on to that 2-0 lead versus Hertha, we would be, I believe, either 10th or 12th on the table right now.
And, tied for 10th.
Okay, tied for 10th. Yep. That's only 2 points. So the table is crazy tight. Whichever club gets a win on Sunday, whether it be us or whether it be Cologne, that is just going to be a huge emotional kind of end to the first half of a rough season. What are your thoughts going? To me, that's the big match. The Bayern match tomorrow is a fun match. You know, whatever happens, happens. But that Sunday match, what are you thinking?
That's looking at the table right now. So Stuttgart has 17 points and Leipzig up in seventh has 21. So it's, as you said, it's really crowded there in the middle. If we can not get embarrassed against Bayern and hold some of this momentum going and thump Köln, we could be looking at a comfortable mid-table Christmas, which would be amazing after the start we had.
Oh my gosh. And how you and I both said to anybody that would listen, hello, anybody, you out there? If we can tread water up to Christmas, this first half has been a success with everything that's gone on with this club. If we got 3 points at Cologne, and it's obviously doable. Cologne plays that high tempo pressing offense. And I'm curious if, because going into this season, I predicted them to be one of the relegation candidates because I just didn't think they had the talent to do what Baumgart likes to do. And I'm wondering if they're a little gassed at this point. And I'm wondering if the lack of talent to perform what he wants to do, plus being a little fitness weary.
Well, if they're gassed and they have Wolfsburg tomorrow, and then we play them after a short break, that's a huge benefit for us. And we know Wolfsburg's going to make them run because we just saw Wolfsburg team do that. So this could really be playing in our favor to line up to really kick Colin in the teeth right before the break.
Yeah, they started the season so strong. They were in the top 7-6 there for a bit that they need this win on the weekend to kind of get some momentum back. And we started the season so weak that it's kind of, I almost would say they need it more than we do for mental and emotional purposes. Though, like you said, if we were mid-table at the end of this first half after everything that's happened, sign me up in a second. So yeah, what do you think the betting predictors have for this one? Who do you think is the underdog, Cologne or Stuttgart?
I'm going to say Stuttgart's the underdog because Cologne's at home.
You got it. You are nailing this. Yeah, it's a half a goal for this one. What do you think? Who you got?
I'm going to take Stuttgart. I think we're on the upswing.
Yeah, I like the half a goal on this one. I kind of thought it would be a even pick 'em, but on the road, I'll go with that. I am scared to do a tip kick prediction machine on this one. Tip kick went 0-5 last this weekend. It is now 6-21 on the season. Ooh. I mean, that's in Major League Baseball, that's even questionable at this point. So I might have to avoid doing a prediction on this one because if tip kick predicts you're winning, it's not happening.
Did Did you try turning it off and on again?
I haven't tried the IT suggestion.
It's worth a shot.
Work at it. All right, Matt, let's wrap this up with what we learned, okay? What we learned, actually, I'm going to go to a different match. I was watching the Union Berlin match, and Timo Baumgartel, who, if anybody knows, the only players I know in the Bundesliga are ex Stuttgart players. Timo Baumgartel, the announcer said, had done a cameo on a German soap opera during the week. And so that got me thinking, Matt, is there a particular soap opera in America that you are particularly fond of?
No.
Come on.
No, but there is, my wife is a diehard, longtime Young and the Restless fan, and she will not let me be in the room when Young and the Restless is on, because I cannot help but make snide remarks about everything that's happening and ask about storylines I know nothing about. Mm. And so if I walk into the room and YNR is on, she pauses the TV and just stares me down until I leave. And she is right to do so.
Young and the Restless is also the program that my mother would watch. And I would go home after 9 months at college, and I would go home and she would be watching it just like she had been 9 months before. And the storyline had not changed at all in 9 months. I knew exactly what every character was up to. I knew exactly who was sleeping with who. I knew pretty much, and I'm curious if I turned it on now after not watching it for almost 20 years, if that would be the same development.
Yeah, there's a couple new characters. Every now and then I see a new face on the TV and I ask her who these people are and she just stares me down. But my Aunt Carol is also a huge YNR fan, and my Uncle Seth has said the exact same thing. He says about every 6 months, he checks in and says, you know, is Billy still doing this? What's Victoria up to? And he already knows, and he feels like he's completely caught back up and knows exactly what's happening with that show.
I was excited because the actor who plays Victor on Young and the Restless was in Titanic, and I thought this is his breakout. This is his breakthrough. He's now going to take that mustache of his like Philip Forster to the big time. And sadly, he went down with the Titanic and he went down his career too.
He is, I don't think he's good. I think he's very wooden. And my wife likes to, every time I comment on his acting, she likes to point out to me that he is German born and say, he's one of your people.
Wow, your wife just took a dark turn on this one.
She's got to get me where she can.
Well, as long as she supports you on the weekend as we're watching Stuttgart take on the mighty Billy Goats of Cologne, I guess it's all good. Young and the Restless, I just thought about this, is somewhat similar to Jungenwald, right?
Oh, very good, very good.
It all comes back to the soap opera that is Valerie Stuttgart.
All about Stuttgart.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in today, everybody. Matt, thanks so much for coming on this week. I think we'll see how would it go. How do we end this with, as the days of our lives or the sands through the hourglass?
Sands through the hourglass. These are the injuries of VfB Stuttgart.
The soap opera of VfB Stuttgart continues. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us, Matt. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for having me, Travis. Talk to you soon.
And for Matt, and for good luck, here we go.